You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Pop a top again. I've just got time for one more round. Set 'em up, my friend. Then I'll be gone and you can let some other fool sit down. I'd like for you to listen to
9 minutes after nine. Alan Jackson.
From a woman who said she was through and calmly walked away. I tried to smile and did a while, but it felt so out of place. Did you ever hear of a clown with teardrops streaming down his face? Pop a top again. Think I'll have another round, set 'em up, my friend. Then I'll be gone and you can let some other fool sit down.
All right, a couple of emails. Mac, read more of that Gettysburg letter. I love that stuff. Okay, I will. You know what, honestly, I do too. The first-person accounts, to me, are incredible teachers. They put you, for instance, you could go to Gettysburg or any battlefield. You could go there and, you know, you can walk around, and that's one thing. When you go there with people that know the battle and they can turn you on to these kind of first person accounts of the people who fought there and then wrote about it afterwards, it's intoxicating. You look around and you see exactly, you know, we looked across the wheat field that was inundated with smoke. The air was heavy. On the second day, on that July 2nd, the smoke hung in the air. We could see men running back and forth on the battlefield. We could see formations moving in and out of the smoke as it moved, you know. And you're sitting there looking at it, and you're like, you know, you can feel it. You can feel it. I mean, you sit there. I mean, if you're interested in military history at all, it gives you goosebumps. But again, the pronouns, I, they, you know, it's awesome stuff. And but again, what it does is it helps create the conditions for learning because it's so vivid. And that's what I think that you need to do relative to ethics training, is it has to become more vivid training. Because honestly, when you see people out there, that you'll go by the map. Here's some instructor, you know, with his binder or her binder out there, and they've got people that are doing that training. The gunner joins me now.
Hey, you there?
I am here.
Have you got an iPhone?
No. Do you?
Yeah. Don't ever get one.
Why not? People, Apple. Dude, oh my God.
I know. It's convenient to a point, but the problem is, like just now when you were trying to call me,
yeah,
it was in my pocket, so when I pulled it out, and people...
This is good. This is going to be good, okay? I'm not sure what's going to happen, but... when we got to
see. See what I mean? Gosh.
What happened?
AT&T.
What happened?
Okay, so my screen enlarged.
Right.
You know, that it just went really super zoomed in.
Right.
So then I had to go research it, like, what, how to get that off, and it's a double tap of three fingers.
Right.
Which, come on. Why don't we just, hey, Apple, why don't you just turn that function off completely?
Well, they would probably say that that's your responsibility.
Yeah, whatever.
Hey, can I ask you some leadership questions today?
No. Okay.
Well, you know what, Mike?
Are these the emails?
Well, kind of.
Are these going to be common sense? Like, come on.
Well, no. They're not going to be.
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not going to be stupid ones. They have to do with you personally.
Oh, okay. Then they're probably stupid. Go ahead.
Well, okay. So I'm addicted to this whole leadership at the point of and confrontation thing, right?
Yeah.
It just occurred to me that you were the battalion gunner for 3-5 when the Hamdania thing happened.
Yes.
I never even I know that we're in Fallujah and you're with 3-5, but it doesn't occur to me that you're the battalion gunner at that time.
I was.
So I'm reading this article that's written about this corporal by the name of Magan Calda.
Yep.
So let me ask you about these guys and your opinion on this, because this is, you know, to me, one of the cool.
Oh, here we go.
Well,
okay.
No.
Let me first clarify a couple things first. So,
okay.
Because your facts are kind of inaccurate.
Okay.
Yes, I was the gunner of 3-5. However, Kilo Company 3-5, which committed these atrocities, was not with 3-5. That's when they were attached to Dave Furness in 1-1.
Right.
For the election stuff. So, they were not part of us when they did it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying that, okay, it's 1-1 fault now, but they weren't in our AO.
Right. Right.
So I can tell you straight off the bat, I mean, I can cut this piece down pretty quick for you and get you to understand that, hey, we knew that there were some issues with that company.
Right.
We brought them out. We brought the whole entire company out of, I'm forgetting the places. Like, south of Fallujah was, the Zidon.
Right.
And so we brought them out of Zidon, and did a whole reset. Like, ethical reset. Like, you know, all this crazy shit was going on down there, and we had to make sure that our guys weren't doing something stupid.
Right.
And when we brought them out, you know, we had this talk with some of these guys. We brought everyone out. We had this talk. We went through. But for a lot of those guys, not all of them, but for a lot of those guys, it went on empty. It was just blank stares. You know, kind of that whatever.
Okay, let me stop your mic because I get that if I'm going down to talk to him, right?
Yeah.
I don't get that if you're going down to talk to him, because you are everything. I mean, a gunner, and let me tell you, and Mike wore it very naturally. Mike's not one of these guys who, like, walks in, dun-da-da-da, you know, being king for a day. Mike owns every bit of that rank. Okay, and with the credibility that goes with the combat credibility, the MOS credibility, with the personality to wear that. And when a guy like Mike comes to talk to you about those kind of things, to me, I as a Marine, and I'm listening because of the credibility that you bring with you when you came. So I don't.
Yeah, and most of them did. Most of that company was a good company.
Right.
The biggest problem came to was it really lacked a lot of leadership at that time. There were, you know, a lot of young guys that were running roughshod over everybody. And, you know, this whole, they were Fallujah vets. You know, they fought a year prior in the Battle of Fallujah. They'd seen it and done it all, man. These guys were combat-hardened vets. And that's the problem, Mac. We made them that way. We talked so much shit about how good and how elite and everything else that these guys started believing their own propaganda. Right. And then it came back to, they were not going to put up with this shit again. They saw it once. They weren't going to let these guys get away from, you know, get away with what they were going to do to their own people. So we had suffered some casualties, and a couple of them snapped and said, "Okay, hey, let's go and let's go get some, you know, revenge on our own. We'll figure this out." Right. Because they got tired of, you know, the leadership. They got tired of the man upstairs not making the right decisions. You know, that Lance Corporal. Strategic Lance Corporal that knows that how to win the war. If anybody would just listen to him. You've been around those guys. And so that's what we kind of were into. And then when the company was forced to, we were forced to basically detach a company and send it to 1-1 for this election thing, the surge. Kilo Company, because they owned no land, they were kind of a free roamer people, because we had India, was down in, Paris, and then we had Lima, that was down on the ECP-1, on the bridge and on the peninsula.
Right.
So they owned land. It would have been a lot harder to move them than to move, Kilo. But, you know, and Dave will tell you, man, these guys, They had some swagger about them that they didn't rate. I'm not, you know, they were just a bunch of cocky kids because they would walk around with their boots on blouse. You know, they wouldn't shave. They started going, they started that primitive behavior.
Right.
The writing was on the wall. And,
okay, stop.
You know,
stop.
We did.
Just footnote that primitive behavior. Explain what you mean, to everybody what you mean.
When people start internalizing, you know, they start not worrying about others. A lot of the like, you know, that one caller called in and said, "Oh, leadership, you guys don't know anything about it." Well, we do. And one of the things you do is when they started internalizing and they started becoming individuals, because of lack of leadership around them, that's that gone primitive. They were all in, they started going into this survival mode. And then it was, you know, the us versus them type of, philosophy, and again, they weren't going to listen to command because command was the bad guy. Command wasn't getting it right. Command was not winning the war. They had the answers. It was, you know, how you treat violence with violence.
Right.
You know, how do you go about your day? You know, if that guy hurts you, you kill him. You know, so there was a lot of that going around, and then one thing led to another. Someone influenced somebody, and they went out and did what they did.
Did you, I remember hearing the statement that this corporal had made. His name's Marshal Magan Calda. And he was,
yeah.
And did you know him? I mean, you obviously.
Yeah, I know.
And supposedly, When this plan got rolled out in front of everybody, he said, "Yeah, I'm not doing that." And what he said was, "I didn't want to have to do, quote, I didn't want to have anything to do in killing the insurgent or whoever it might have been. But at the same time, I was willing to support my guys because I wasn't going to go off, let them go off into night on their own. And essentially, I wasn't going to turn my back on these guys who I fought with. Who have saved my life, I've saved their life. That tie is so deep. So what they did was they concocted this deal where you know, he wouldn't participate in the shooting of this guy, and that's how he got around it. So at this, you know, I'm curious about your thoughts, Mike, relative to this, right? Does he stand up and say, "Hey, not doing it"? I mean, because it's not a black and white. It's so hard when you throw the whole loyalty piece in and turning your back on your battle buddies and all that. I'm curious about your thoughts of it.
Well, if you listen to that statement and you kind of laugh at it, and because you sit there and say, well, I'm not going to partake in this, but I can't turn my back on these. These guys are my buddy.
Right.
And you kind of scratch your head and go this, okay, what was your reasoning? Why? All right, because they were your buddies. You know, they were, man, these guys went to combat with. They trusted these guys. And now they're in a position where they're not making sound decisions, and you know this, and you're going to follow them anyway because they're your buddies, and you don't want to let them down. You know, that's that whole concept of friends don't put friends in positions like this. They're not your friends. They were not your buddies. Yes, you may have been around them in combat, and yes, you may have fought with them, but they put you in a situation where the outcome was not going to be a good outcome. You know, and he faced the consequences of this. And then a lot of those guys were like, hey, wait a second. I don't understand. I didn't do anything. I just went because I didn't want to be, you know, that guy. But I didn't participate. I don't care. So if your buddy calls you and goes, hey, what are you doing today? Oh, nothing. Hey, I need you to drive your car. Okay, where are we going? Oh, we're going to the bank. Why? Oh, we're going to rob it. Okay, hey, I'm not going inside, though. No, I'll do that. I'll go hold them up at gunpoint. I'll grab the money, and I'll run out there. I just need you to drive. Okay, got it. You go, you get arrested, the police charge you with bank robbery. And you say, wait a second, I didn't go in the bank. You know what they say? How shit, you were involved. At any time you could have walked away, at any time you could have contacted authorities, you could have been more responsible, made better judgment decisions, but no, you chose not to, and now, guess what? You're gonna face, you may not do exactly all the time, but he gets 23 years, you get 22. And people go, oh, well, it's bullshit, where's the justice? Why did that happen? Because. I mean, if you know something is not right, you know something is not correct, this is not good, this is not the behavior that I should be displaying, and you do it anyway, because of peer pressure, and I had no sympathy whatsoever for you.
How do you communicate that to young guys, though, Mike? Because they're novices at the Marine Corps, right?
And well, Matt, it goes back to you and I talked about this. If what we were doing in boot camp was 100% correct, we were training these guys with these intangible benefits of honor, courage, and commitment, we wouldn't have this discussion. But the problem is, we do what we can. We do the best that we can do. It's not perfect. Sometimes we get across to these guys. Sometimes we don't. You know, and in this case situation, we didn't get across to some of these guys. They weren't the quality of Marines that we had hoped that had joined our rank. But we continue. I mean, we just go out and try to identify it. You can't. I mean, you gotta look at the timeline. We were at war. We needed every body we could get our hands on. You know, God forbid to think that, you know, okay, we're gonna send this whole rifle company back to the States because they're not ready. Could you imagine that?
No, it would never happen.
No, but that's what should have been done.
Right. You can't
do it. That should have been done.
You can't do it though. I mean,
I know. Somebody, you can.
Somebody's gotta go fight. I mean, come on.
You can do anything once, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, come on. You guys can't go. Yeah. You can't go with one, you know, you can't go without all your shit, man. You're going. Unfuck yourself when you get there. Fire somebody.
Yeah.
Make a difference. And, you know.
A lot of these, because our, you know, and I blame a lot of it, was based on our deployment schedule was too tight. Our turnaround was way too tight. You know, we didn't have enough time to decompress these guys. We didn't, at that time, there was no whatever program involved talk to Marines when they got back from combat to see where their mindset was. You know, none of that stuff was in effect yet. Then we, you know, then we blame the system for falling apart. No, again, it goes back to we knew we just couldn't bring ourselves to make that decision. Like you said, we can't send them home.
Right.
You know, and I, to be fair, this is a lot of hindsight 2020. You know, you looking back at it, and I understand that. But you knew this going into it. And people will probably say, then why didn't you say something? I did. We were screaming this. Problem is, I can't make that decision. I can't look at it and go, hey, this rep company's combat ineffective, which I did say that. But you're going home. No, I don't make that determination. The determination is made, let's do a reset. It's reset their mind and then push them back out. Well, obviously, as we know, history, that didn't work.
No,
and, you know, people will tell you that I was upset with that whole thing. Not because of what they did. It was how we treated them right afterwards. Right after we took all their weapons from them, we sent them on planes home, in handcuffs, in uniform, they're flying through LaGuardia or whatever, New York. They get off the plane to get some refreshments, and all of the civilians look at them and like, oh, welcome home, and then see the handcuffs and like, ah. And we put them right in, you know. So we treated them, and then right after that, this is what really pissed me off. Right after that, the Commandant of the Marine Corps and the Sergeant Major make their world tour, and they come and talk to us about this battalion we're sitting in the audience. We're not going to name this battalion, but this battalion did horrendous, outlandish, human rights violations. And, you know, and I'm looking at the giant clan at the time going, does he know who he's talking to? And of course, obviously, probably not. And I said, man, those kids just left on a plane a couple days ago and now they're guilty. Here's the Commandant of the Marine Corps tainting, because he went all over the United States, tainting the jury pool, right, and saying that these men that committed this murder are guilty. Well, what happened to innocent until proven guilty? Even in the military, it's supposed to work that way. That's where I got upset. They never got their honest day in court, because by the time the court date came up, man, every Marine knew who these kids were, and they heard through the Commandant of the Marine Corps that they were guilty. What do you need a jury for? And that's subsequently how a lot of them got off. You know, Mattis, being who he was, the stand-up guy he was, came out and said, listen, and he, you know, and he is the general, I don't know if he's the presiding general over the course, but came back and said, listen, we can't do it to these guys. This is not right. We screwed it up. So it was a big issue.
Yeah, Mike, put yourself in that situation as a junior corporal.
I would be tough, man.
Right.
I'm not lying to you. Yeah, you're losing your friend, losing guys that you really care about. You see him getting killed, then you don't see anything being done about it. At your level, anyway. Right?
And
so you think that the enemy is just getting away with freebies.
And even worse sometimes is we detain guys, and then they take him to
the
detention facility, and they say, yeah, there's not enough to keep this guy, and they turn him loose. Back on the street.
Or they'd make the unit drive him back out.
Right.
Okay, yeah. Hey, come pick this guy up.
What?
Oh, yeah, and pay him $200 for his time. What?
Yeah.
That used to be a racket.
Right.
I mean, if I would have been good at it, and I would have been an Iraqi, I would have tried to have been detained every week. You're making more money than the president of Iraq does.
Right.
By making it a job of getting detained. Yeah, it's just, it's so when you really dissect everything there, man, it's like, oh my goodness, what were we doing? It was total rookie hour for a lot of things you did.
Right. Right. And so you as a corporal, what do you think you would have done in that situation?
I would want to say that I hope I would have done the right thing and walked away from it. And then went and told somebody about it. But, you know, looking back at some of my buddies that I had when I was corporal and shit like that, I probably would have went along with it.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're a tight-knit group, man. By that time, you're tight. You're so tight, you're squeaking when you walk.
Well, I was talking about it earlier, and I said, look, if somebody farts in the room, you don't need to ask if somebody farted. You know whose fart it belongs to, right? You sleep together. You're together all the time, right? You save each other's lives. You know girlfriends. You've seen them, pictures of them naked. You know, and that's I'm not going to defend it, but I'm just saying that's how close you are. Now, Mike, do you think that there's a way through leadership training that you can get young Marines to believe that, kind of like the whole mothers against drunk driving things and friends don't let friends drive drunk, you know, by me saying I'm not going to do it, this is an act of loyalty. I'm not turning my back on you guys, but I'm not going to let us do this. And if you want to fight, I'll fight, but I'm not doing this. And I'm not letting you do it because it's crazy, it's stupid. Do you think there's a way that the Marine Corps can train young? Because again, this goes on, you know, sergeant, right? He's the senior guy. What is he in the Marine Corps for now? 7 years?
Yeah. You would have thought that he would have got it right.
But yeah, but again, 7 years. That's not even his second enlistment. And he was in charge of a little piece. Where were they? They were in Nasser al-Salam, right?
Yeah.
Right on the border towards Abu Ghraib. They were north of Abu Ghraib, and I thought the place was called Nasser al-Salam, but anyway,
yeah,
in that
vicinity. Like I said, that was 1-1-0. I didn't know.
Do you think there's a way that we can train to that? I mean, to get them to see it as an act of, hey man, I got to be strong when you're weak because this can't happen. This isn't right. It's not us. We can't do this.
Yeah, you can train to anything. You know, and I don't know what happened to this program that was coming around to make career squad leaders. You know, I forgot what happened to that. Basically, the earmarked guys that were way above the quality, and then they were going to be, you know, a different MOS, like 0370s, or I don't know what they were going to be, but basically they were going to be career squad leaders. They were going to go through all of this school training just to professionalize that MOS. And that would have been one way, you know. Well, I mean, but you look at Mac, I mean, shit, you know as well as I do, man. How much training do we have in the Marine Corps on all these intangible benefits of, you know, honor, courage, commitment, and, you know, all this stuff. It's mindless how many hours we spend doing that stuff.
But I will tell you this, though, Mike.
And it didn't work on these guys.
Right. But there's training, and then there's training. You can sit through a class,
and I agree.
You know what I'm saying? But when a guy like you walks in and says, all right, boys, sit down, I want to talk to you about this stuff, it's not the same class, right? And we learned that, I want to say, towards the end of 2000, well, I want to say it must have been 2006, because when I remember leaving in 2004, you know, you filled out a post-deployment questionnaire, blah, 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 and you went home. In 2006, they had a program where you went out to Al-Asad and you were kind of supposed to decompress, but the classes weren't given by, you know, the division shrink and shit like that. It was given by the most experienced and respected staff NCOs and officers in the battalion, because they found that those voices carried the most credibility with those Marines. They had fought together, and so hearing this from these guys was 180 different than hearing it from other guys who people didn't know. Just getting, quote,
right,
a class on it. So I don't know. It's hard. This is hard stuff. And again, this is the same conflicted stuff that, you know, that we've seen at Parris Island. You know, that
right.
your hat
it hasn't gone away.
Yeah, your hat's together, right? You're going through this together. There's this fraternity you're a part of. You know, this mystique you're a part of. And how do we create guys that will stand up and say, no, man, we're not doing it. You're not doing it. And if you want to go right now, then let's go. But we're not doing it. And it just seems like we shrink on. And you know what? And we don't know the times that guys stood up and did this and it got taken care of. You know, maybe that happens on a fair amount. But it seems like these colossal failures we have, there's more than enough guys in the vicinity that we're in a position to say, no, not only no, but hell no, we're not doing it. To save all those guys from...
Well, it's the CIA's motto. Our failures, our successes are never known, and our failures are known to everyone, right? So the same thing that you said is, we will never know if it's working, if people are actually saying, no, we can't do that, guys, come on. No, that's not a smart decision. We only know when it blows up in our face.
Email question for
you. So it could be working.
Right. No, you're right about that. Mac, I just want to take a second to thank Mike. We flip him a lot of grief about things like stopping power. And were I not a little bit more restrained, I'd give him some shit this morning about how much I do love my iPhone. However, I just want to say how much I appreciate his candor relative to this. I read about this situation, and I've listened with interest as guys have come on and talked about these kind of situations and the difficulty. But Mike was there. And it certainly sounds different when he talks about it. So just want to take a second to thank him for his experience. You guys have had incredible tours as Marines. The people that you cross paths with, the places that you've been, are the places really that the Marine Corps fought over the course of the last 15 years and the guys that were most prominent. Do you both know how lucky you are to have had the experience and serve with the guys you served with? Semper Fidelis.
Yeah,
really enjoy the program. Thank you. Mike, do you know how lucky you are to serve with the guys that you serve with?
Yeah, man. I think about that all the time. You know, and we joke around a lot. We kid around a lot. But in the end, man, the opportunity that we had, these were modern day Dan Daly's and Smedley Butler's. And, you know, one day, there'll be history written about these guys and books and stories being told to other Marines. And it goes back to, you know, you can look back at your time and say, they had the honor, they're like, who is it? You should play that scene, Dick Winter, right, at the last of the movie. And he said, the letter was written to him about his grandson and asked him, were you a hero in the war? And his response was, no.
No, but I know.
But I had the honor of serving with him. Or being in the company of them.
Right.
Yeah, it's the same way. You know, I have the honor of being at those key locations, at key times, those key battles, around key individuals, you know, that changed my life and for the better. So, yeah, I know how lucky I am.
No, you know what? And I'll tell you what, and when you go through that stuff, when you're around guys who have big shoulders and a little bit of experience, it really helps. And when that guy loses his way, if he doesn't have guys who take him aside and say, hey, man, where did this come from? We're not doing this. Have you lost your mind? We're not doing it. You know? And
yeah.
that's how these things happen. You know, it's not one guy who takes a group of guys there. You know, it's one guy, and you know what? And it's when you decide, as Mike said, when you decide to go, what was the term you used? Was it go rogue, or you said they were?
Go primitive. They become primitive.
And that is.
Yeah, go back to your primitive instinct.
And that is, you know, I had a friend of mine tell me, you know, Mac, we learn discipline through the Irish Penitent and MNU. You and I were talking about it. When you lose that, and it starts with, hey, we've been there. We know the deal. When you hear that phrase, that should scare the shit out of you.
Yeah, that's the time where you stop what you're doing, put that guy in handcuffs, and take him with you.
Yeah, as a preventive measure. Look, you're coming with me.
He's
because
he's going to kill somebody or kill himself.
And because, again, the act of and again, I liken this kind of stuff to, you know, the whole Mothers Against Drunk Driving. I mean, shit, when we were young, nobody picked up anybody's car keys. You drove drunk, your friends drove drunk, and Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
It was something to talk about.
Right.
It was something to talk. You're like, oh my God, dude, can you believe I drove that far? I was so wasted. And everybody like, oh man, you're so cool. Yeah, that was a badge of honor. Man, I drove back to that party. I don't even remember getting in the car and coming home. And people would laugh about it. We've come a long way.
Yeah, that fight. I mean, just the awareness, and I don't know. The Marine Corps got to come up with some Mattis type phrase. You know, first do no harm, no better friend, no worse enemy, guardian angel. The Marine Corps got to come up with some little phrase that says, "When you're weak, I'm strong," or something like that. That you're not afraid to fight. You know, I'm not afraid to fight over it. Right? If you want to fight,
right.
Fight. And just some little Mattis-esque type of saying that chunks that information for Marines, saying, hey, look, man, it's a greater act of loyalty to save them from this kind of stuff that they're going, that you're seeing at Parris Island, that these guys went through.
Yeah, it's the self-destruction. If you see them getting ready to self-destruct and you don't do anything about it, I mean, what kind of friend are you? I mean, a true friend, really, in the end, would step in. That's a true friend. Because in the end, you know, he may be hated for it, it may destroy the relationship, but in the end, he was the true friend. He saved your life by helping you, because you couldn't make the right decision.
And Mike, you know that they
made it for you.
Yeah, if this corporal, who initially, if Megan called the would have said, no, look, I'm not doing this, and I'm not going to let you do it, right? And if I have to go see the lieutenant, I'll go see him, but we're not doing this, you know? And so let's just say they didn't do it, and he had to survive that initial ostracism for a few days, and he had to deal with Hutchinson. You know, as time went by, guys would have come back and said, hey, man, can I tell you something?
Hutchinson.
Thank you. You saved us that night, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
You saved
no one thinks night. Like that, though, Mac. Yeah. They don't think like that.
We got to figure out a way to teach that because you know what, Mike? What's most powerful are their own statements after this. You know what I'm saying? Just their raw statements. Read this one.
Yeah.
Read this one. Not me standing up talking about it. You know, or no, read this, read this, read this. Here's a picture of this. Here's a picture of this. Okay. This is what happened.
Right.
That stuff that, you know how, I mean, it's so powerful that raw stuff, not the narrative, the raw stuff is. Anyway. All right. What's going on in Texas today? Talk to me.
In Texas? I don't know.
Where are you? You're in Texas? What the hell?
Oh, I'm in the garage, cleaning the garage.
I thought you were in Texas. What kind of weather are you having? Tornadoes? Everything okay? This is.
Oh no, it's hot and sunny, man.
Hot and sunny. What's
another?
Why is the garage messy? What's going on?
It's not messy. I just don't like the way it was arranged, so I'm rearranging.
Any major movements in the garage, or are we just doing?
Oh yeah, completely rearranging. Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah, I get in this because I think I have an OCD thing with so I've noticed that. See, I have this like these two little junk trays that sit on the edge of my workbench, and they're full of screws, washers, nuts, bolts, all sorts of wire caps and all sorts of stuff. So I'm like, oh man. So I go through there and put those where they need to go back in their respective little bin. Then I look at everything and I'm like, you know what? It doesn't have a flow to it. I need everything over here. I need this here. I want my power tools over there. I need to move my drill press over that way. You know, my workbench is a little too cluttered, so now I gotta clean out under the trays. And then what is this doing here? That type of thing.
Here's another email. I love my iPhone and my M1911. Like, okay.
Your M1911?
Yeah, M1911. His 45.
Well, good for him. I mean, there's someone that definitely has some security issues that needs a big gun to compromise.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Big gun compromise. Yeah.
Right. Compensating.
Yes.
All right. What else? I'm trying to think. What else is going on in the world? The Yankees won again last night.
I know Yankees. They were talking. I saw an article today. I was laughing. I was going to forward to you, but then that would have caused me to talk baseball. It would have. But it was funny. It said, "Future World Series play. Playoff. Red Sox and the Yankees." And I'm like, you guys are giving the Yankees way too much. Because it's still not even halfway through the season yet, boys. And we know how the Yankees finished the season.
What do you mean?
I would be more scared with the Yankees if they would have started out and been in the middle of the pack.
No, you wouldn't.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, watch these guys. They're going to get on fire. But if you look back, go through your little history thing and look back and count the number of years that the Yankees led the league, and then when it comes down to the series, what happens?
They win 27.
Well, I hate this. No, they don't. Man.
27 times.
Full of your day. Not 27 times, but they weren't leading this far. In the series, they came back. They're a comeback team. They play middle ground, two or three games out of first place, and then they destroy you.
Okay. All right. So this is all much ado about nothing. We're getting ready for the big fade. Here's why I don't think they'll fade though, Mike.
Why?
I think their pitching is deeper and their hitting is deeper than they've been in the last 10 years almost. I mean they're
okay.
That's why I don't think.
Record this.
Okay. Write it down. It was 46 up in Montana today. Snowed in Bozeman.
Well, Bozeman is like close to North Pole, man.
No, it's not. The summer, it's 46 up there? That's crazy.
Yeah. Why would you want to move to Bozeman, wear a jacket all year round?
I don't know, but Montana man's up there. He seems to be enjoying it. He's recovered well from his little operation that he had. He's full up brown now.
Yeah, that's great.
He hasn't even been texting lately. Hold on, email.
I know that's even better.
Hey Mac, has the Gunner watched the news lately? It's always fun to listen after he does. Have you? You sound pretty mellow, so that means you haven't seen the news lately. Yes.
No, I have not seen the news. Two things you don't want in experience with me. Number one, me to run out of Copenhagen, and two, watching the news. You don't want to have that experience in your life. If I had run out of Copenhagen and we're together trapped somewhere, you'd probably out yourself. Because it would be that traumatic. I got to pass some holes.
In what? Do you have drywall in your garage?
Yeah, I got drywall. There's just a couple holes that are kind of bugging me. I'm in that mood, Mac. Everything's bugging me right now.
Mike, if you ever see Mike in his garage, it's like, I went to see a buddy of ours who used to live like three houses down from Mike, named Chris Bronzy. So I'm at Bronzy's house, and he goes, come on, let's go down and see if Mike's outside. So we walk out, and Mike's, I don't know, he's bouncing around. We walk up the driveway. And so this is the first time I've seen Mike's garage, and it's pretty organized, right? But he's...
Yeah, well, it was kind of...
Yeah. And Mike's
organized by normal standards. Yeah.
Mike's, this was California Mike, okay? Pair of shorts, pair of flip-flops, sunglasses, white t-shirt with some kind of writing on it, all right? And he's talking fast. And he's, so I'm looking at his garage. I'm like, hey, Gunner, garage is pretty organized. He goes, yeah, it is. You got a problem with that? I said, no, I just kind of an observation. It's like, yeah, I like it organized. What's in the,
yes.
What's in all those compartments? Gun parts. You want to see them? I said, no. I said, are you mad today? He said, no. Why? So then when you know your friends, and you can feel their blood kind of pulsing, it's something that you should never shy away from. Right. So
yeah, take advantage.
You got to take advantage and jump on it. And, but no, it was the first time I saw his garage, and it was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. What's the key to keeping, are there certain things in your garage that you think contribute to organization? Do you have certain kind of bins, or is it just being organized, whatever?
No, yeah, certain kind of bins. They're all clear, too. Gotta have clear bins so you can see into them. That's the key. Clear bins.
Clear bins. All right, give me
So
what did the Red Sox do last night, just for the record? Did they win?
I don't know. Did they lose?
Did they win, lose, or did they not play? And did you watch
it? They didn't play.
You didn't watch the NBA last night, yes? I take that.
What?
You didn't watch the NBA. You didn't watch the NBA Finals last night, did you?
Okay. How many times do I got to tell you this? Basketball is not a sport.
No, it was pretty
good.
It's
a hobby. It's like, no, it's not. No, don't even start.
It was. It was good. LeBron James is good.
You can play by yourself. You can play by yourself.
You can, you know what? You're true. It's true. You can't play that game by yourself.
Yeah.
What? Okay.
You can play hockey by yourself. But
no, you can't.
Like that. But that's a sport. Basketball,
what?
Don't get me started with basketball.
Okay, one more email, I'll let you go. Hey, Mac, please ask the Gunner if he has any hopes for Dennis Rodman's diplomatic mission to North Korea. Dennis Rodman's in North Korea. Do you have any... Do you have any hopes for that?
I hope they keep him.
They just let a kid go.
You know what? Let's make him the first ambassador to North Korea.
Hey, that's
such a good job.
That's an idea. Hey, this is from Montana.
Get him out of the country for a while.
This is from Montana. Way too much time on your hands to be that anal about your garage. The garage is for using, not for organizing. Whoa. What's that about?
Okay. Let me clarify something for you, Montana man. I like having things organized. So I look at all my wrenches, and they're in order. They're ordered by first standard, then metric, from small to large across the bin. Then I have my pliers, my wire cutters, my needle nose, my regular pliers, my adjustable pliers, all of that stuff. Everything, so I know where everything's at. It's in place. So I got to have this organization.
Yeah. Take that, Montana man. Punk.
Yeah.
And another thing. Hey, clean up your garage.
Uh-huh.
That means, I mean, you know what that means. His garage must be a disaster. Shit everywhere.
When people say that, they defend that kind of shit, that means that their shit's messy.
Oh, messy.
And all they're doing is, yeah.
He'd have to straighten it up to qualify for messy. Disaster. Mm-hmm. Absolute disaster. All right, what's on the agenda for the rest of the day? The garage?
Yeah, man, I'm like Everything is off the shelf. Everything's in the middle of the garage. And now I'm going back to, like, okay, how am I going to put it back here that makes sense to me?
Now, will it be done by the time that Tina gets home?
I hope so. Otherwise, we got to put up with that.
From Montana Man. Holy shit, my wrenches are in a pile in the pickup toolbox.
See? Dude. I sent you a picture of all my sockets, right?
Yep, you
did. Yeah.
It's pretty organized. I think you could, like, maybe you could do that.
Color-coded.
Yeah. You could go up and help Montana Man organize this whole ranch.
Too damn cold.
You could color, hey, you could head up to Montana and color-coat the whole ranch.
Oh, yeah. Look, like right now, guess what I just found?
What?
I found a pack of staples tucked behind the duct tape.
God.
And they're not supposed to be there.
Well, who put them there? Who would have put them there? You put them there.
I don't know.
Your wife? No, your wife would not.
Bet you the wife did. Because these staples belong in the staple bin. The bin right here that's got staples in it. These staples are going to piss me off. I'm telling you. Don't do this shit again. Who would do that? Who would tuck them behind? That doesn't make no sense to me. Tuck them behind duct tape. No, here's the duct tape right here. Three rolls, different colors, different widths, all the way up. There's the blue tape. That's the carpenter tape.
Right.
That goes over here. Then my pipe tape is over there. Besides that, none of the tapes get combined. All my glues are right here.
Who's
my Gorilla Glue, my Pipe Bond Glue. All the glues are there.
Who's sabotaging your garage?
I don't know. Someone moved my rubber cement.
All right, you've clearly...
Rubber cement does not belong by tape measures. That makes no sense to me.
You clearly lost control of the garage. That's bothersome.
I got to get it back, man. Yeah. My tape measures, who would put rubber cement next to tape measures? Makes no sense to me. Right? See? Okay. I got some shit. Someone has been screwing around in my garage.
All right. Say goodbye to Montana Man.
All right, man. I'll see you later, Rob. Take care of yourself. And go clean your garage.
Yeah, clean your garage, you bum. All right, man. Have a good day. Good luck in the garage.
Yeah. I'm so pissed off of that. Okay.
All right, bud. There you have it. The one and only. The gutter. Oh, man. I have the best friends in the world because they are they're crazy. But you know what? On a serious note, you want to know one of the best parts of my friends is when we work together. We had all, you know, we'd all had different experiences in our deployment, different deployments. And then the group was such a good group, you know, with very few exceptions. We saw the world the same way. We'd all played team sports growing up. We were all team guys. You know, the majority of them had great senses of humor. Even-keeled, intense, smart, and again, this group was, that's why it was so unique, and they were all like that. Our logistics guys were like that, not just our infantry guys. Yeah, we had staff and COs were like that, and that's why it was such a great experience to be around these guys. And when they told you they had it, they had it. And they had their head in the game all the time, and they were constantly sharing information to make you smarter. And when somebody was struggling, you know, you knew it. And, you know, you swung by and you said, hey, what's up? You know, nobody ever made a big deal about it. It was just a great, great group of guys. And it's you know, Mike's one of them. Montana man is another, and you've met most of them. There's some you haven't met, but you will meet them. You know, F-18 guy is one of them, and they're just. And I'll tell you what, a year of doing that stuff is not easy, especially if you're involved in the daily killing and medevacking every day. And so you lean on each other more, and you miss them when they're gone. For instance, Mike and F-18 guy left. They were on the Admon, so they went home, you know, probably 2.5 weeks before the rest of us did. And you missed them. I mean, you know, you go looking for that which you've known, right? Somebody else in the office. Damn. Where are these jackasses? So, anyway. So, it's cool that you get a chance to meet them. But again, on a serious note, my thanks to Mike for talking about, you know, we talked about, I don't know why I never really connected Mike with that event. And I know because I was with, so the way the geometry of that kind of takes place, Mike's with 3-5 on the other side of the river from Fallujah. I'm with 5th Marine Regiment. 3-5's working for the 5th Marine Regiment, and so is 1-1. The Army folds itself into Baghdad for the election and the surge. They hand us territory, battle space outside of Baghdad. And so 1-1 gets handed that battle space. And so they needed another company. So 3-5 sends a company to 1-1. That's how that kind of all worked together. And that's what Mike was talking about. Anyway, so my thanks to Tom Drowdy for coming on talking leadership on a Tuesday. My thanks to Jack Coban for coming on and talking about fighting and confidence and how that plays into, you know, your ability maybe one day to intervene to save your friends from themselves. And then Mike for, you know, for his very candid discussion of those real events as he was part of that unit. Anyway, most of all, thanks to you for listening. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. All Marine Radio, here to stay. Attorney General's testimony coming up in about a little less than 2 hours. That'll be interesting. On a Tuesday, All Marine Radio, out.